allows to speak Spanish here, or our kids are prohibited from learning in their mother tongue, which is Spanish.
On Thursday, Catalonia's Superior Court of Justice stepped in the debate, arguing that the teaching of Spanish in the region remains, quote, residual, and it urged authorities to teach a minimum 25% of the curriculum in Spanish, in addition to Spanish class. Education officials in Catalonia denounced the move as a breach of regional competencies and vowed to appeal to Spain's higher court.
The regional authorities in Catalonia have long disregarded court rulings. They've always been quick at trampling our freedom as citizens.
Spain's Conservative People's Party, center-right Ciudadanos, and far-right party Vox have so far failed to slow-walk the bill in its journey to final approval in the Senate. Cusay Kadrip, Barcelona.
Being in Pakistan, their hearts are with you.
He's a Noor Dari, a man of Pakistani origin. He's heading a London-based anti-Muslim think tank, Islamic Theology of Counter-Terrorism. Dari is suspected to be sponsored by apartheid state of Israel. Dari, who left Pakistan almost 20 years ago, has been now at the center stage of what Islamabad says, a lingering disinformation campaign propagating that Pakistan is getting ready to normalize ties with Israel.
Pakistan government, they want to establish a relationship with Israel. This is the reason they sent a delegation, and not only the one person, a couple of persons, including the advisor of the prime minister. They flew from the London to Tel Aviv.
The claim was immediately dismissed by Pakistani prime minister as baseless.
Why would our delegation visit Israel when we have a policy not to recognize Israel? It is clearly a fake news. In a democratic society like ours, it is unacceptable to normalize ties with Israel because our entire nation stands by Palestinians.
Pakistan has been reportedly under intense pressure from the UAE and Saudi Arabia after some Arab rulers normalized their ties with Israel, notwithstanding the seething public anger in their countries. Both the UAE and Saudi Arabia reportedly threatened Pakistan to expel its an estimated 4 million expatriates if Islamabad resisted their pressure to normalize ties with Israel. This followed a few news anchors who were encouraged by Pakistani military to start debating in favor of normalizing ties with Israel, an allegation denied by army known for calling shots in country's foreign policy making. The media outlets in the apartheid state even find it hard to speak with a credible Pakistani journalist.
Many Pakistani journalists would even decline to appear and speak with me, speaking with from our studio in Tel Aviv.
Pakistani journalists who spoke recently with the Israeli news channel are either tainted with the corruption charges or had desperation to come into limelight through controversies. Anyone supporting Israel in Pakistan meets with instant condemnation at social and mainstream media, given Israel's unending mass killing of Palestinians and their forcible expulsion from the Muslim Holy Land from 1948 to onwards. The major thrust of the argument of the lobbies working for Israel and its allies has been to cite Arab countries abandoning Arab nationalism in occupied Palestine for an independent Palestinian state. However, theologists point out that forcing Israel to withdraw from Islamic Holy Land is not an Arab cause, but in fact it is a greater cause of Muslim nationalism beyond color, creed, and geography, something which overwhelmingly prevails in Pakistan. Javed Rana, Islamabad.
In a rare case, the second in Yemen in the past 3 years, a pair of conjoined twins were born in a Sabain hospital in Yemeni capital Sana'a. The two children are in critical condition and need to be treated outside the country, which is impossible due to the continued siege and the closure of Sana'a airport to the Yemenis.
This is a tragedy that children in Yemen suffer as a result of aggression, blockade, and the use of internationally prohibited weapons as well as malnutrition. In the case of the Siamese twins and congenital deformations, the biggest problem is that we cannot send them abroad to have surgery, so their lives are at risk.
The director of the Health Bureau called on the United Nations and the World Health Organization to send a plane to transport the two children or to send a medical team to conduct the surgery inside Yemen, where devastated and under-resourced health services cannot offer any help to these children.
I'm the father of the twins, and their condition is critical, and they need to receive medical care and surgery outside the country because the health situation in Yemen is collapsing and Sana'a airport is still closed.
Infants suffer a difficult situation in Yemen, and the absence of essential medical supplies and healthcare facilities needed for their survival and well-being. Yemen health services have been in a dire situation since the start of the Saudi-led war on the country in 2015.
With the fast approaching of the new year, the Sana'a airport remains closed to sick children and women, causing the loss of many lives. The airport is open to United Nations airplanes only. Abdulatif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Local elections in Indian-administered Kashmir, held in 8 phases, have come to an end. The voting process has remained by and large peaceful amid stringent security measures. After the revocation of Kashmir's special status, regional political parties had refused to participate in the electoral process as a sign of protest against India's decision to strip Kashmir of its autonomous status. That resulted in the strengthening of the Hindu nationalist Bharatiya Janata Party in the Muslim majority region. However, this time, the regional parties formed an alliance to take part in the local elections. Compared to the past, a large number of people came forth to cast their ballots, and many of them told Press TV that their aim is to keep the BJP away from Kashmir's grassroots.
Since the BJP came to power in India, it started taking decisions against minorities. The BJP has taken Kashmir's autonomy, Kashmiris' jobs, and now they are eyeing land. They don't care about the people of Kashmir. We came to cast our votes against those people who only aim to destroy Kashmir's ethnicity in the name of mainstreaming Kashmir.
More and more people in Kashmir have developed skepticism on the overall electoral process after scores of video interviews of the District Development Council or DDC candidates started circulating on social media. A number of candidates have no idea what positions they are running for in the local administration, and even worse, some have no idea what DDC means.
Kashmir, man. In order for votes to be equally distributed, the Election Commission has accepted nominations from all sorts of people. There is no set prerequisite for candidates. I wonder who they are empowering. How can an uneducated person with no idea of economy, finance and politics seek equal rights and development for me? Basically, they do not need educated people. They want stooges who will implement what the Indian government will decide for us, without thinking about people's interests.
This is the first time that DDC elections are being held. Members of the DDC are expected to prepare and approve district plans and expenditure schemes, which will replace the district planning and development boards in all districts across the region. Earlier, district development boards looked after the planning, approval or implementation of centrally sponsored schemes. The result of the 8-phase elections will be announced on December 22nd. Apparently, the elections in Kashmir have paved the way for other electoral processes in the volatile region. However, many say this ballot has made the people of Kashmir politically aware of the fact that New Delhi is trying to thrust such electoral processes in order to create an impression that normalcy has taken hold after it stripped Kashmir of its autonomy, actually without building trust and bridging the gaps. Shahana Butt, Indian administered Kashmir.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود
قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of a speech delivered on October 12, 2020 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, via video conference with the participants at the joint graduation ceremony held at the Imam Ali Military Academy.
As I said, rationality means making the correct calculations. Being afraid, running away, and evacuating the arena does not correspond to rationality. Rather, it corresponds to cowardice, fleeing, and the like. Rationality means making the correct calculations. Of course, the enemy is trying to promote the wrong meaning of rationality, and some people repeat the enemy's words in an unconscious way. When you see that they adopt certain measures and engage in propaganda efforts against our missile resources, our military organizations, and our regional capabilities, which are very important for our defensive power, you witness that American prattlers and babbling thugs say whatever crosses their mind in a nonsensical and uncalculated manner. Wherever they go, they speak against the Islamic Republic. This is because our fundamental resources have been achieved on the basis of thorough calculations.
And love, all I see, nothing more I'd ever want or need. My Lord, protect me from dishonor. Grant me faith to be stronger.
By Allah's favor, these resources will move forward. The enemy's propaganda results from their backwardness in this arena and from their fear. Therefore, the important point is that we preserve our calculation system, that we keep it healthy, and that we prevent it from being disrupted. If our calculation system is disrupted, many of our resources will be gone and our good conditions will turn into bad conditions. It is not only the armed forces, the defensive apparatus, and our defensive power that should be based on rationality. If we wish tasks on all important matters related to the management of affairs in the country, particularly in the Islamic Republic, because Islam has placed great emphasis on rationality, reason, and thinking, to move forward in the correct direction, we should act on the basis of rationality.
Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah. Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to
This is IRIB English Radio.
Get up. Good morning.
Good morning. Your captain speaking, and we're currently cruising over Iranian skies.
ایستگاه شهید بهشتی مسافرین گرامی خواهشمند از جهت تعیین مسیر به تابلوهای راهنما توجه فرمایید.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning. How is everything?
Good morning, all.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Supplication on Thursdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who has taken away the shadowy night by His power and brought the sight-giving day through His mercy. He has clothed me in its brightness and given me its favor. O Allah, just as Thou hast spared me for this day, so also spare me for its likes. Bless the Prophet Muhammad and his household, and torment me not in it and in other nights and days by allowing me to commit unlawful acts and to clothe myself in sins. Provide me with its good, the good of all within it, and the good of everything after it, and turn away from me its evil, the evil of all within it, and the evil of everything after it. O Allah, by the protective compact of Islam, I seek mediation with Thee, and by the inviolability of the Quran, I rely upon Thee. By Muhammad, the Chosen, Allah bless him and his household, I seek intercession with Thee. So recognize my protective compact, by which I hope my need will be granted. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, decree for me on Thursday five things, which none embraces but Thy generosity, and none supports but Thy favors. Health through which I may have the strength to obey Thee. Worship by which I may deserve Thy plentiful reward. Plenty in my state through lawful provision. And that Thou makest me secure in the places of fear through Thy security. And placest me in Thy fortress against the striking of worries and sorrows. Bless Muhammad and his household. and make my seeking his mediation as an intercessor, give prophets on the day of resurrection. Surely, thou art the most merciful of the merciful.
The debate.
Welcome to the debate. I'm Behrouz Najafi. In a virtual meeting on Monday, top diplomats of Iran, Germany, France, the UK, China, and Russia renewed commitment to preserving the Iran nuclear deal. They also want Washington to return to the deal with no preconditions. Foreign Minister Zarif says that Britain, France, and Germany share the blame with the U.S. for irreparable harms to Iranians. At the same time, Iranian MPs want the Rouhani administration to install cascades of advanced centrifuges and raise uranium enrichment. They have given a two-month ultimatum for Tehran to start enjoying economic benefits under the nuclear accord. That's what we'll be discussing in this debate show.
Foreign ministers of the remaining signatories to the 2015 nuclear deal between Iran and world powers have reiterated their commitments to preserving the agreement. During a virtual meeting, China and Russia called on the United States to unconditionally return to the deal and lift its unilateral sanctions against Tehran.
The United States should return to the Iran nuclear deal unconditionally as soon as possible. It should also lift the sanctions against Iran, third-party entities, as well as individuals. And on this basis, Iran should fully resume its nuclear commitments.
Following the meeting, Iran's foreign minister said the Iran-EU declining trade data from 2014 to 2019 proved that the European signatories to the nuclear deal have gravely breached their commitments under the accord. Mohammad Javad Zarif said Britain, France, and Germany should share the blame with the U.S. for what he called irreparable harm to Iranians. He said the trio has a last chance to save the pact. This comes about a month after the Iranian parliament gave a two-month chance to the West to lift the sanctions on Iran by overwhelmingly voting yes to a draft bill dubbed the Strategic Action Plan to lift sanctions. It requires the Iranian government to suspend more commitments under the nuclear deal in case sanctions continue. The plan, among other things, requires the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran to produce and stockpile at least 120 kilograms of enriched uranium with a 20% purity level annually within 2 months after the adoption of the law. The parliament adopted the measure in the wake of the assassination of top Iranian nuclear scientist Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, which Iran blames on Israel. Ironically, Europeans once again failed to condemn the targeted killing of yet another Iranian scientist. In recent weeks, Europeans were found expressing hopes for a possible return of the U.S. to the JCPOA as President-elect Joe Biden is preparing to take office next month. However, their stance remains dubious with regard to the Iran deal, as they are now talking about revitalizing the accord if Iran negotiates on its missile program. However, Iran has stressed that it will not accept any preconditions in returning to the nuclear deal and will not negotiate its missile program or regional activities. Tehran says the U.S.'s so-called maximum pressure campaign against Iran has failed and is coming to an end.
Well, that was Mehdi Farman reporting. Now, joining me in this debate will be Senior Research Fellow with Global Policy Institute, George Samueli, out of Budapest, and also Director of the Risalat Strategic Studies Institute, Sam Tarabi from the Iranian city of Qom. Welcome to the show, gentlemen. Let's go to Budapest. George, Iran's top diplomat blames the European signatories of the JCPOA for little trade ties with Europe. The financial mechanism that they launched, known as ZANSTEX, has not done much to facilitate trade and banking transactions as it was supposed to do. What's the EU side of the nuclear deal going to do this time?
Well, the Iranians are absolutely right, because when the JCPOA was signed, it was always a theme that at some point the United States would walk away. And so Iran was given assurances that should the United States walk away, should the United States impose sanctions, the Europeans, European signatories to the JCPOA, would make up for it. It would actually, you know, so in other words, Iran wouldn't lose anything as a result of the United States withdrawal from the JCPOA. Well, that never materialized. Trade between the Europeans and Iran is now lower than it was before the JCPOA was signed. So the Iranians are understandably very frustrated about this, and they are obviously rather annoyed with all this high-handed talk. The United States will return to the JCPOA if Iran does this, 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 and this, and this. Well, Iran wasn't the one who walked away from the agreement. Iran wasn't the one who violated the agreement. So why should Iran undertake to do things that it was never supposed to undertake in accordance with the JCPOA to which Iran had adhered?
Mm-hmm. Good question. Now, Sam, the remaining parties to the nuclear deal are asking Washington to go back to the JCPOA from which President Trump pulled his country out unilaterally. And that, of course, without any preconditions. Now, what do you expect Joe Biden to do?
Well, actually, I have to say that what we heard today from Dr. Zarif was a very clear statement of Iran's position. It's a continuation of what Dr. Zarif spoke about when he was in the Euromed discussions. Mm-hmm. And it's very clear, and he also tweeted it, where this is the last chance for the Europeans and for the U.S. to do whatever they need to do for the JCPOA. And, you know, last chance means last chance, inshallah, hopefully. Because basically what we saw, especially in Dr. Zarif's tweet, he laid out the points that in detail, which I'm not going to repeat here because of time. But basically, he made a very important point. He said to the Europeans that democracies, and he put the word democracies in quotation marks, cannot ask Iran not to implement the law of the parliament that the parliament has passed. So basically, this last chance is going to be less than 2 months that the Europeans and the Americans have. In less than 2 months, the government will implement the new law. Dr. Zarif said the same thing in the Euromed conference. And so this is what's in front of us now. And the question is, and it's not even a question, I think, it's maybe a rhetorical question, is who really believes that the Americans and the Europeans are going to do in 2 months what they haven't done in, you know, a number of years? So this is the reality. The reality is that the Americans and the Europeans will not do what they were supposed to do all these years in these 2 months. As Dr. Zarif stated in his tweet, the Iranian people must, and he capitalized must, feel that there is a sanctions relief and that the sanctions are lifted. This clearly will not happen in the next 2 months. And in 2 months, the law that was passed by the parliament will be implemented. And it could be that we live in a world where Iran never leaves the JCPOA technically, but practically there is no such thing as the JCPOA.
It's less than 2 months, there's only 1 month left. Yeah, Georgia, Tehran has negated renegotiating the nuclear deal on grounds that there has been no give and take, and that's the natural outcome of any deal. And Iran did comply to the letter, as you know, of the agreement, but did not benefit economically as it was supposed to under the accord. Now, what can be done to avoid the repeat of such an action on the part of the EU?
Well, I mean, obviously, what could be done is the United States returning to the JCPOA unconditionally and lifting sanctions unconditionally. Whether that will happen is, of course, extremely doubtful. But it's very hard to see why Iran would want to start complying with all sorts of requirements that were no part of the JCPOA when the states that are demanding this of Iran have themselves not adhered to the JCPOA. So the United States obviously hasn't adhered to it by walking out unilaterally. The Europeans haven't adhered to it by not compensating Iran for the economic hardship it suffered as a result of the United States withdrawal. So the Europeans and the Americans are not in compliance, and now they're demanding that Iran start adhering to all sorts of conditions that were no part of the JCPOA, and which are incidentally are unreasonable demands, because after all, Iran does need ballistic missiles. I mean, Iran requires them for its security. I mean, Iran has been threatened by the United States, has been attacked by the United States, and it has been repeatedly threatened by Israel. Iran should have the means of defending itself. And the same goes for its being a regional power. I mean, it clearly has an interest in ensuring the security of Syria and Lebanon. Iran cannot just give up on these things. So these requests are absurd, and Iran will rightly reject them.
Now, Sam, the incoming U.S. president has promised to take his country back to the nuclear deal and also lift the sanctions, while also hinting at more negotiations on Iran's missile program and what it calls regional influence. Now, Tehran has asserted time and again it does not intend to negotiate its missile program. It serves as a deterrent. And also, for your information, we just had this news that Israel's Western-supplied submarines just passed the Suez Canal. It's heading toward the Persian Gulf. So why should Iran in such condition, you know, compromise its defensive capabilities while it's facing military threats from Israel and the U.S.?
Well, clearly it's not going to do it, just as my colleague said. The point is this. Iran, through its foreign minister, in an official meeting at ministerial level, has declared and told the other participants, the Europeans and the Americans, that this is their last chance. So the question is, will Dr. Zarif and the current administration in Iran have the courage to end this game, this so-called process, when this last chance is missed by the Americans and the Europeans, which it will be missed? There might be some cosmetic things that are done, there might be some statements, but none of the things that Iran has been demanding for years is going to be implemented by any of the other parties in the next 2 to 3 months. So this is the question. Will the JCPOA effectively end in the government that signed it, in the administration that signed it? Or will this administration just simply wait until its term is over and we have a new government, a new administration in Iran in June, and this will go down in history as one of the many failures of this administration, many of the unkept promises that this administration had? The issue is not to beat on this administration, to beat up on this administration. The point is that many things were said 8 years ago by the president and by the foreign minister, and none of them happened. So this is something that we have to learn from. There was a decision by the Iranian state to enter into a strategic negotiation with the West. It actually started 20 years ago with the goal of normalizing economic relations with the West. The result after 20 years is that this didn't happen. And a big reason for that is that the people in Iran pursuing this path did not have a clear understanding of the reality of what the US is, and a clear understanding that the Europeans are basically vassals of the United States. They do not have the power to defend their own interests. It is in Germany's and Europe's interest to have independent economic and strategic relations with Iran, but they are not capable of doing that. And this is a deep issue, this is a deep civilizational and historical issue of the Europeans post-World War II. So, we have a generation in Iran who grew up at a time where the only alternative in the world was the West. This is, if you look back, late 80s, early 90s, this whole way of thinking started at that time in Iran. The world of 2020 is very different than the world of 1989 or 1991. There are alternatives for Iran besides the West. And what's very interesting, and something that's very rarely reported, is that the one group in Iran which has always been a champion for relations with the West, which is those who are involved in business in the industrial field, not consumer products, industrial products, who maybe for generations, one, two, three generations, have had relations with the West, they themselves have given up on the West, and especially on Europe, when they saw how the Europeans were not able to defend economic interests that they had established over decades. So the Iranians, the elites in Iran, have now come to the point where they have alternatives to the West, which they didn't have 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. They entered this process, and history has recorded that this process has failed for Iran. That the Westerners bring in countries into processes, the peace process with the Palestinians, the whatever process you want to call this that we had with the West, this is nothing new. But process in itself has no benefit or profit for Iran. The goal of all this was to lift sanctions and to normalize economic relations. Mm-hmm. It hasn't happened, and it won't happen.
Okay, George, as Sam also mentioned in his comments a few minutes ago, recently the Iranian legislators have passed this bill that pushes the Rouhani administration to further enrich uranium and make use of more advanced centrifuges, etc. Now, they insist that they want an end to what they call the one-sided gain to which Iran adhered even more than 2 years after Washington left it without benefiting much from it. Let's have your comments on this.
Well, it's very understandable that the parliament has insisted on this, and I think it's that it's a right course for Iran to take. Iran is a signatory of the Non-Proliferation Treaty. It is entitled to all of the benefits of a peaceful use of nuclear energy. Iran does not, never has had a nuclear weapons program, has no interest in nuclear weapons, and it gave up. Unilaterally gave up its nuclear energy program in return for commercial, economic, financial relations with the West. And as my colleague has pointed out, that never materialized. Well, since it never materialized, then Iran obviously has to pursue a different course. I think it should basically accept the JCPOA is no more, it's just history, and move along a different path. And it is entitled to the peaceful use of nuclear energy. And it does have economic partners that it can get around, whatever the hardships. I mean, there's no question. I mean, given the power of the dollar, the US sanctions have hurt Iran, very seriously hurt Iran. But Iran does have other options. It has partners in Russia and China, both of whom have an interest in essentially moving away from this unipolar world order where the United States basically dominated militarily and financially and economically, and therefore they have an interest in helping Iran out. So I think, I think that it's understandable that the Iranian parliament has decided that a different course would yield much better results than the they'd embarked on 20 years ago. Mm-hmm.
Now, some Tehran argues that West Asia's crises and arms are mainly imported from the U.S., U.K., France, and Germany, and these countries are selling billions of, tens of billions of dollars worth of weapons to their allies in this region annually, and they are expecting Iran to curtail its defense capabilities. How can they?
I think Dr. Zarif said it best when he told the German foreign minister to shut up. It's Dr. Zarif said. Basically, it's the height of hypocrisy, and I think it doesn't even require us to discuss this very deeply, the total moral depravity of the West when it talks about these things. If you look at Yemen, if you look at all the decades that these issues that exist with the Palestinians, and all the wars that we all of us experienced in this region because of what they did. And so, as was mentioned by my colleague, obviously Iran has a strategic deterrence, and it is now moving from a regional strategic deterrence to a global strategic deterrence. Again, these issues are often not mentioned in Western media, but Iran has officially declared that it has ICBM capability. So we're going to be in a world in a very short time where Iran has strategic deterrence on a global level, where the Americans and the Europeans have to deal with an Iran that cannot be threatened with all options at the table, because if one of the options is used, then the option for Iran will be to retaliate in kind.
Okay.
And this is the big lesson that we have to learn, which is if you're going to enter into strategic negotiations with the West, you have to have strategic deterrence, which means missiles and submarines, because you mentioned submarines, and other military hardware that is able to create strategic deterrence.
Okay, appreciate your comments and contribution. We had a senior research fellow with Global Policy Institute, George Samueli, out of Budapest, and director of the Risalat Strategic Studies Institute, Sam Tarabi, from Qom.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Recently, UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson announced new restrictions because of the new coronavirus strain. Several European Union countries and Canada were banning or limiting some flights from the UK to try to limit any spread. Health experts in the UK and US said the strain seems to infect more easily than others, but there is no evidence yet it is more deadly. Patrick Vallance, the British government's chief scientific advisor, said that the strain moves fast and is becoming the dominant variant, causing over 60% of infections in London by December. The strain is also concerning because it has so many mutations, nearly 24, and some are on the spiky protein that the virus uses to attach to and infect cells. That spike is what current vaccines target. Dr. Razi Gupta, who studies viruses at the University of Cambridge in England, said, "I'm worried about this for sure, but it's too soon to know how important it ultimately will prove to be." He and other researchers posted a report of it on a website scientists use to quickly share developments, but the paper has not been formally reviewed or published in a journal. In this regard, we have prepared for you an article authored by the staff writer of the Associated Press News Agency under the heading, "Are New Coronavirus Strains Cause for Concern?" Please stay with us to hear more about the issue. Reports from Britain and South Africa of new coronavirus strains that seem to spread more easily are causing alarm, but virus experts said it's unclear if that's the case or whether they pose any concern for vaccines or cause more severe disease. Viruses naturally evolve as they move through the population, some more than others. It's one reason we need a fresh flu shot each year. New variants or strains of the virus that causes COVID-19 have been seen almost since it was first detected in China nearly a year ago. Recently, UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson announced new restrictions because of the new strain. Several European Union countries and Canada were banning or limiting some flights from the UK to try to limit any spread. Here's what is known about the situation. Health experts in the UK and US said the strain seems to infect more easily than others, but there is no evidence yet it is more deadly. Patrick Vallance, the British government's chief scientific advisor, said that the strain moves fast and is becoming the dominant variant, causing over 60% of infections in London by December. The strain is also concerning because it has so many mutations, nearly 24, and some are on the spiky protein that the virus uses to attach to and infect cells. That spike is what current vaccines target. Dr. Razi Gupta, who studies viruses at the University of Cambridge in England, said, "I'm worried about this, for sure. But it's too soon to know how important it ultimately will prove to be." He and other researchers posted a report of it on a website scientists used to quickly share developments, but the paper has not been formally reviewed or published in a journal. Viruses often acquire small changes of a letter or two in their genetic alphabet just through normal evolution. A slightly modified strain can become the most common one in a country or region just because that's the strain that first took hold there, or because super spreader events helped it to become entrenched. A bigger worry is when a virus mutates by changing the proteins on its surface to help it escape from drugs or the immune system. Trevor Bedford, a biologist and genetic expert at the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center in Seattle, wrote on Twitter, "Emerging evidence suggests that may be starting to happen with the new coronavirus," adding, "We've now seen the emergence and spread of several variants that suggest this, and some show resistance to antibody treatments." Dr. Gupta said in April, researchers in Sweden found a virus with two genetic changes that seemed to make it roughly 2 times more infectious. He said about 6,000 cases worldwide have been reported, mostly in Denmark and England. Several variations of that strain now have turned up. Some were reported in people who got them from mink farms in Denmark. A new South African strain has the two changes seen before, plus some others. Gupta said the one in the UK has the two changes and more, including 8 to the spike the protein. It's called a variant under investigation because its significance is not yet known. A World Health Organization official recently said the strain was identified in southeastern England in September and has been circulating in the area ever since. Will people who had COVID-19 from an old strain be able to get the new one? Will it undermine vaccines? Former U.S. Food and Drug Commissioner Scott Gottlieb said on CBS Face the Nation, probably not. Gupta agreed, unlikely. U.S. President-elect Joe Biden's Surgeon General nominee Vivek Murthy said on NBC's Meet the Press that there is no reason to believe that the vaccines that have been developed will not be effective against this virus as well. Several experts noted vaccines produce wide-ranging responses by the immune system beyond just those to the spike protein. Dr. Manoj Saloy, the chief science advisor for the U.S. government vaccine distribution efforts, said on CNN's State of the Union, the possibility that new strains will be resistant to existing vaccines are low, but not inexistent. Bedford agreed, up to now, I don't think there has been a single variant that would be resistant. He said, I think this particular variant in the UK is very unlikely to have escaped the vaccine immunity. Bedford wrote on Twitter, I'm not concerned because a lot of changes in the genetic code would probably be needed to undermine a vaccine, not just one or two mutations. But he wrote, vaccines may need fine-tuned over time as changes accumulate, and changes should be more closely monitored. Murthy said the new strain doesn't change the public health advice to wear masks, wash hands, and maintain social distancing. More and more European countries are suspending flights to the UK as the new strain of coronavirus takes hold in London and southeast England. Belgium and the Netherlands were the first to suspend all flights, with the former all banning train travel to the UK. They were joined by Austria and Italy, which have now also banned flights to and from the UK. Meanwhile, Germany is also understood to be considering similar action, with the German government official telling the DPA news agency that restrictions on flights from Britain are a serious option. Furthermore, the French news channel BFM TV has reported that France, too, is seriously considering suspending flights and trains from the UK, and so that and the French are looking for European coordination. The rush by European countries to suspend flights from the UK comes in the wake of Boris Johnson's introduction of a Tier 4 level of COVID-19 restrictions for the capital city London and the southeast of England region. The latest measures are set to cover the Christmas celebrations period and will apply until at least the beginning of 2021. According to the top British health officials, the new variant of coronavirus is not necessarily more deadly, but it is proving to be up to 70% more transmissible. The Tier 4 measures in the southeast will apply for an initial two-week period, with a review due on December 30. The crisis spurred by the new virus strain is compounded by the prospect of a no-trade deal Brexit, thus presenting the British government with a perfect storm of major problems. To that end, Prime Minister Boris Johnson chaired a meeting of the government's Emergency Committee, COBRA, later on Monday, December 21st, in order to contain the crisis.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.